Nothing makes me happier, excites me more when new groups, young people, are kicking it old school. That's Alabama Shakes and Hold On. We are coming to you live from Toronto's affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640. When we come back, does the modern day UFO phenomenon fall within the scope of biblical prophecy? My guest, Ali Siadatan, documentary filmmaker, had a close-up UFO sighting while on the road to Isfahan in his native Persia, modern-day Iran. Now, that caused him to look deeper into the modern-day UFO phenomenon, and as he went down the rabbit hole, so to speak, an astonishing, mind-blowing, paradigm-shifting tale emerged, and he'll share that with us in mere moments. Finally, a dating and friendship site to meet others with similar interests. Find your match that shares an interest in the paranormal, science, life after death, ghost stories, Bigfoot, UFOs, alternative medicine, and conspiracy theories. If you're a fan of Coast to Coast AM and wonder who else is out there listening to this show and how can I meet them, here's your opportunity. ParanormalDate.com. It's arrived. Created by George Norrie and his longtime friend and colleague Mark Rawlings, the service taps into a unique audience. Millions of people use dating services nationwide or worldwide, but few have a chance to meet people sharing their same interests in the paranormal. And George speaks all over the country, and people are always coming up to him and saying, I can't find someone who understands. This was George's inspiration for ParanormalDate.com. The website dating service is completely free to join and peruse, so take a look today. To upgrade to premium features, users simply need to type in his promo code George for initial 50% discount. ParanormalDate.com. You are not alone. Back with my conversation with Ali Siadatan, documentary filmmaker, UFOs, Angels, and Gods, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Ali Siadatan has been a UFO researcher since 1997. In 2004, he released a groundbreaking documentary, UFOs, Angels, and Gods. The initial release of the rough cut on Google Video in 2004 received 270,000 views in 9 months. The final cut of the documentary was released in 2005, but never shown to the public until now. Ali Siadatan, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Fine. Thank you, Richard. Great to be here.
Take us back to your what really led you down the rabbit hole, as you like to say, and this was your close-up UFO encounter while you were in Iran.
Yes. I was visiting my father, and we were driving at night from Tehran, the capital, to Shiraz, but we were going to sleep over in the city of Isfahan, which is a large city south of Tehran with 14 million people in it. And the whole journey is 11 hours, and in the middle of the road, 5-6 hours in, is Isfahan, and you sleep over, and then you continue. We were driving down this highway, which was really just a road in the desert. It's kind of a rocky style of desert, stones. And there's just one lane coming up and one lane going down, and there are no lights, the only lights of the coming cars, and then, you know, restaurants and villages along the way. My dad prefers to drive at night. He says there's less traffic and it's safer. So this is well into the night. We are leaving around midnight, and this is well into the early hours of the morning. We're driving, and my back is to the passenger seat. I don't have my seatbelt on. I'm leaning against the passenger seat in an SUV, and my dad's wife is driving, and my dad is sitting in the middle of the back seat. And suddenly my dad's wife points behind me and starts to make frantic gestures and sounds like, but I'm so caught up in what I'm saying that I continue to speak. But my dad looks at her and says, Nima, what's wrong? And he then looks in the direction she's pointing, and then he starts to make those very same frantic sounds and gestures. So finally, it gets my attention. I'm like, what's going on? What's happening? So I turn around and I sit properly in my seat, and I look out the window, kind of out a little bit the front of the windshield to the right. And there is this large object coming down. It is so big that if it were sitting on the ground, it would be like 3-4 stories low-rise. The height of it. Very big, circular, and it has divisions, like I can see floors, I can see metallic divisions. And then there are lights, green lights all over it to the point where there's a green glow coming from it, but I'm close enough that I can actually see the multitude of green lights. And this thing is slowly coming down, and I am just like basically in a state of shock. First I'm like, okay, it's a helicopter. Then I'm like, no, okay, it's not a helicopter. And then I'm like, you know, I just accept what I'm just watching now. I'm just, okay. And it's coming. The car is going straight. Eventually we are perpendicular to this thing. I'm looking out directly my window, and I see in the darkness of the desert a tube coming up, a round, large tube. And it's night, and this thing is black, the same color as the desert night. And it's coming out. If we weren't so close, it would be perfectly camouflaged in the night. And this thing goes on top of this tube, and then it just goes into the earth. And I'm like, oh. Then she's like, did you see this? Did you see this? And he said, I did, I did. And I just kind of sank into my chair.
So let me just back up here. You're saying this enormous craft, and you described it as being about the size of a low-rise apartment complex, maybe
yeah.
four stories high.
Yeah.
It gets sucked into the desert down through this sort of camouflaged black tube and just
yeah.
vanishes right before your eyes.
Yes. Crazy, I know. Yeah.
And in that moment... I've never had an experience like that. I've never seen a UFO, but I would imagine that that would simply, if it happened to me, I'd never be the same. That would pull the rug out from underneath my reality. I mean, I would be
yeah.
devastated, I think.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that I was looking into the Bible and looking into the idea of flight, as I was coming across teachers who were pointing in that direction, and seeing this suddenly propelled my research tenfold, and I thought, okay, this is incredible, I need to look deeper inside of this. My life has changed forever.
Wait a second. So before you had this UFO encounter, you were investigating what exactly in the Bible?
Well, before that, the idea that there's flight in the Bible, there's flying occurring in the Bible, there's these beings, and they are called the angels in Christian language, and they are called the Elohim throughout the Bible. And these guys, they have relationships with the nations, and the Hindus have them, they have Vimanas, which is the modern-day name for plane. In Hebrew, it's Merkava, which has been translated as vehicle. It says the Merkavas of Elohim, right in the Bible, the vehicles of Elohim. But it's always been the chariots of God. And I'm not referring to von Däniken's book, The Chariots of the Gods. I'm referring to a term in the Bible, the Merkava Elohim, the chariot of God, and the chariots of God. And so these are mentioned in the Bible as well. So it's something that I was looking into, the possibility of a connection between, you know, modern-day UFO sightings that people are talking about in ancient stories, including those in the Bible. I was my mind was open to that, and so when this happened, it was confirming, you know, it was like, this is very interesting, I need to now look into this, and it became a very important part of my life. But as I said, going down into the rabbit hole, where it took me, what I discovered, is a tale that needs to be told, and that's what the documentary is about.
UFOs, angels, and gods. And people can view that at thinkagainproductions.com.
Yes.
Let's go back to, let's start at the beginning, and in terms of, you know, putting all of this UFOs, ETs through a biblical lens, then we go back to the beginning, which is Genesis. And that's the first time that we encounter the term Elohim, which is, that's plural for God, is it not? Is that gods?
Yes. It says that Elohim said, let us make Adam in our image, after our likeness, and so it's definitely plural, and there's a famous conversation where Satan says to Eve that if you eat from this, you will become wise like one of the Elohim, like one of the gods, essentially one of them. And then later on, we hear that we are told that man has become like one of us. It's again plural, and so we can't allow him to eat of the tree that would make him eternal, because we first now need to be redeemed and remade. The knowledge of evil is now in us. So definitely there's constantly this talk of pluralities. And then in the book of Psalms, it talks about the council of the Elohim in Psalm 82, which Jesus quotes when he is accused of blasphemy, that he equates himself, that he is the manifestation of God himself into the human world. And he says, well, it says in your own scriptures that you are Elohim and the sons of El Elyon, the sons of the Most High, and Elohim, gods, the children. So we are definitely put inside of this race, and could this tale unfold in the universe?
Well, for those that follow one of the, you know, the three great monotheistic religions, how do you square the term Elohim, plural for gods, with the idea that we have, you know, the one true God, the Creator? I mean, some in the Christian faith have tried to explain this by suggesting that Elohim is a sort of a foreshadowing of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, right, the trilogy, the Trinity, the Holy Trinity.
Yes.
Is that what Elohim is referring to? Or is there, in fact, an acknowledgement in the Old Testament that there were sort of the gods of old in addition to the one and true God?
Well, yes, that's a very interesting question. It really plunges us into an amazing tale. There is definitely deceit. Imagine at some point someone comes and tells the human world, all of this was just mythology. There's nothing to see here, folks. But I think the Bible tells a different tale and removes the curtain and says, wait, was this all just mythology? So God, the Hebrew God in the Bible, is presented as the God of gods. That is one of the titles of God, the God of gods and the King of kings. He's the El of the Elohim. So he's distinguished among the Elohim. He's the mighty one. Elohim simply means the mighty ones. And it is said that Yahweh, the one who presents himself as God to Moses, is the mighty of the mighty ones, the El of the Elohim. And we are told that he created them all. And so God has entered, I don't know, the creation. I would like to think that the universe is part of the creation. And so far when I look out the window, I see that the universe is very vast. And so that God may be inside of time and space, among his creation. That's okay. I can allow myself to explore that thought. There's nothing wrong to say that the story of the Bible may happen inside of the galaxies. And so this is doesn't make God into an alien. God is God. He's sovereign over his creation. He can walk among us on the shores of Galilee, and he can be among these chariots and in the ocean of space, and he can be elsewhere. I can't put any limitations on God. But the story could be happening very well here. So when you look into the Bible, it talks about the gods of the nations as though they are real beings. They're admonished. They are told that they should worship him, all ye gods. Worship him, all ye Elohim. We are taught that the judgment falls on them, like in Exodus chapter 12, verse 12. God says, I will pass through the land of Egypt this night and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And against all the Elohim of Mizraim, all the Elohim of Egypt, I will execute judgment. I am Yahweh. And so here we see that they fall under judgment, that their worship is admonished. It's one of the Ten Commandments. You shall have no other gods before me, no other Elohim before me. And that the worship of the Elohim is the main cause of the exile from the land at the Babylonian destruction. And so this is something that was, you know, there are specific ones mentioned that were being worshipped. Definitely the Bible doesn't present these guys as mythological beings or present them as non-existent or as the Trinity. So the word Elohim means sometimes the gods of the nations. I have found close to 200 verses in the Bible where that is mentioned. I'm putting it on a PDF file. It's all there. You can use Strong's Dictionary. Anyone can do this research.
So to what extent then, talk to me about the role of the Elohim, the gods, in terms of going back to ancient times, the passing down of the laws and passing down of knowledge, and perhaps more importantly, passing down of technology.
Yes.
That really was instrumental in not only shaping the ancient world, but even, well, as we'll discuss moving forward, shaping our modern world. But your understanding, based on your research, the role of the Elohim in passing down of knowledge and technology.
Yes. What we see is a story of creation where life is planted on this earth, and then the life is seeded with knowledge. Now, that is very interesting, this whole seeding of knowledge. From the beginning, we start to see that we are involved in a tale that involves definite characters that were already in a relationship before we entered Earth, before the first one of our kind was made. And we are now caught in this story that already was unfolding. So we are told that, well, God came and he created, and I think that the story of the creation of Adam is a very interesting story. The sixth phase of creation may have lasted for a long time, and there could have been people made in the image of a multitude of these Elohim. All of them are called Adam, but then suddenly we are told that there is a very special one made. He's not told to go and live all over the earth. He's told to stay put in a garden. And he's going to be the first of the farmers. For the first time, cultivation is mentioned. And he is made in the image of Adonai Elohim. Suddenly, when his story is told, we have a precision. It is no longer Elohim creating, but it is a very specific one, the one that later on we realize is the one that made them all, including the canvas of time and space itself. So there's something special about this particular man, and he's put inside of this garden. He's a farmer. A female is created from perhaps his own genes. And then something very interesting happens in that garden. There is this Nahash, we are told. This guy appears. It's like a play. This, we are told, is history. So it involves these other beings. And he has a conversation. He makes a simple suggestion. And the suggestion that he makes is that we betray a commandment that was given to us. And he, at that point, decrees his own commandment. He speaks knowledge into our minds. He says, well, what's said about this particular tree? And Eve says, well, if you eat from it, you shall surely die. He says, no, you shall not surely die. So he changes our perspective on a decree that apparently God himself had spoken. But he negates it. He reverses it. And then he says, you shall be like one of us, one of the Elohim, knowing good and evil. The knowledge of good and evil will make you wise and like one of the Elohim. And that is true, because later on God himself says man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil. So that was part of it was true. So it's very interesting. He negates the commandment of God and yet attaches a truth to it. And that is perhaps a template that of knowledge. When that happens, we know it is from him. So regardless, he issues commandment and law. Mitzvah, the Hebrews called it the mitzvah, the commandments of God. He issues his own mitzvah. So as the whole story of civilization begins to progress, we start to see that at the time of Enoch, in the book of Enoch, we are reading about an incredible interaction. The book of Enoch is mentioned in the letter of Jude in the New Testament. Enoch is mentioned. A prophet is mentioned from the book of Enoch. And the early Christians and Jews considered it in the first century to be a wisdom book, not part of the canon of Scripture, but respectable as a source. And Enoch talks about how they gave different schools of knowledge to us. Pharmaceutica, the knowledge of herbs and chemistry, essentially.
All right, Ali, I got to jump in here. We'll take a time out, and we'll pick up on this amazing trip, this paradigm shift. UFOs, angels, and gods. Here are the Beatles and Rain taking us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM. The incomparable, the incomparable Tina Turner, River Deep Mountain High. Oh, I guess we should mention, well, the other guy. Do we have to mention Ike? Okay, I suppose. When we come back, we will continue our conversation with documentary filmmaker Ali Siadatan, UFOs, Angels, and Gods, and he is hard at work on another documentary called Goliath Rising. We'll also tell you more about that. He's just concluded a major in-depth interview with Dr. David Jacobs, which should shed more light on this amazing, amazing tale that takes us from the Old Testament all the way up to the modern-day UFO and ET phenomena. Listen, I got to encourage you to check out George Norrie's television show, Beyond Belief TV. If you want to join Coast to Coast AM's George Norrie for dynamic discussions on paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, and all things unexplained, it's really a very special television program, Beyond Belief TV. You really need to check it out. See the world through new eyes. There are new episodes weekly. You get unlimited access to Beyond Belief with George Norrie. You can watch George anytime, anywhere on your computer, your iPhone, your iPad. There are no commercials, no sponsors. Enjoy Beyond Belief ad-free. How? It's simple. Just visit beyondbelieftv.com, sign up, and watch full episodes instantly. beyondbelieftv.com. Check it out. Back with more of my conversation with Ali Siadatan, UFOs, Angels, and Gods, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Ali Siadatan is with us, documentary filmmaker, and the film is UFOs, Angels, and Gods. And if you want to look at it, you can just visit thinkagainproductions.com. thinkagainproductions.com. We've linked up to his website at coasttocoastam.com. Ali, the idea that the Nephilim, which we hear about in Enoch, and I believe it's also referenced in Genesis, the fallen angels, they came down, they commingled with the daughters of man. This has always perplexed me, because if we are talking about fallen angels, right. I've always understood them to be spirit, essentially. Yeah. Is it possible for fallen angels to actually commingle or breed with humans and create hybrids? How is that possible?
How is that possible? Because the Bible, as a book, tells the story of a race, for a lack of a better word, and that is the race of the Elohim. And there is, you know, this God amongst them, and we are one of them, and these guys are one of them. That is the story that the Bible tells. Now, could these guys be in the physical universe? Well, obviously, I saw a spaceship. Once I looked into the UFO phenomenon, I realized how solidly it had been documented, starting with J. Allen Hynek and Dr. Jacobs that you mentioned. There's some serious documentation that has gone into looking at what people see. It's very much real, very much physical, and genetics is part of it. Could it be that the story that the Bible tells is happening here in the universe and we are part of it? And yes, I mean, are they ghosts? Are they physical? I don't know, maybe the top of the line, the Satan level, Gabriel level, Michael level beings, they're very much beings of light, perhaps. They're clothed with light. They've got the gamma rays on, full blast, but they might still be in the physical world, which is in time and space. These guys may be kind of more the soldiers who might carry that mission out. But it says in the book of Job that the Benai HaElohim came to the presence of God, and there Satan was in their midst. So it says that, and so Satan is squarely placed among this group, this order of beings, these creatures. Could they be inside of time and space? Well, I don't know. Again, I don't underestimate the universe. I don't claim to understand everything. There could be a realm of energy. There could be. Einstein says that apparently, if you take matter and you throw it out there at the speed of light squared, apparently it turns from matter into its energy, E equals mc2. So perhaps Enoch was placed in such a machine and catapulted, where he was translated, the New Testament uses a word to talk about it, metathesis in Greek, which means to put in a different order. He might have, at that point, his body might have been chemically or reorganized for him to enter in that realm. Perhaps the story is happening among the galaxies. Really, it doesn't bother me. There seems to be an order. So to put a blanket and say, well, we thought these were just beings of spirit, I think it doesn't take into consideration many passages where we see them as physical beings. They come to Sodom and Gomorrah. The people of Sodom and Gomorrah want to have sexual relations with them. Apparently, they're very handsome. They cast them with blindness. The angels of God cast these guys with blindness. We see that they come and destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham is an eyewitness that sees the smoke rising. Did God hurl a stone through the galaxies? Did he with his mind bend the forces of nature with his word, speak volcanoes to come up? Or did he send his angels to carry out an operation? It doesn't make them less part of the marvelous creation of God. I don't have a problem with the idea that, you know, there's a story happening here in the universe. We see them physical throughout the Bible. They slay the Assyrians. There's one that sits on the tomb of Christ. And of course, God himself, he comes back from the dead. He stands in the middle of his inner circle, and he says to them, I'm not a ghost, I'm not a spirit, a flesh. I have flesh and bone, because a ghost doesn't have flesh and bone like you see me have, he says. And he shows them his wounds, and then he asks for food, fish and honey, and he says, give me food, do you have any food that I can eat? And he takes it and he eats it. And this is a confirmation that apparently the most spiritual of these beings, the incarnate God, declares that he's still in the universe and he is the son of David from apparently the tribe of Judah. He's got the genes of Adam in him. So for me, the question has been, how come they're genetically compatible with us? How come they can come in these stories we read in the Bible, but not only in the Bible? They are the demigods exist in all of the cultures, including India and China, and in the Vedic texts, and the Titans, the Greeks called them. Zeus, of course, was one of the most famous of the gods, and Hercules was one of his titans.
And these are the offspring. These are the offspring of this coupling between the Nephilim, or the fallen angels, rather, and the daughters of men, or female, human females.
Yes. The fact of the modern-day abduction phenomenon had at its heart a coupling of the human DNA with another DNA system. That is what the abductees are reporting. And Dr. Jacobs has documented over 1,200 accounts, and it is very clear, and other researchers as well, like Bud Hopkin, like Johnny Mack from Harvard, it's very clear that these guys are saying, they're saying they're normal people, they are people of great importance, and their stories, they get abducted, and somehow the story that they're involved in involves a coupling of our genes with another gene. It's happening scientifically in spaceships all around us, unlike the stories of old where it seems to be through sexual intercourse. Nonetheless, both then and here, we are seeing genetic compatibility between them and us. How can we be genetically compatible with them unless we have a common source? Is it really controversial to say that of all the things God could be, then no one can put limits on God or put him in a box? Is it wrong to say that perhaps God has entered into time and space and is the source of the life codes himself? Does that make him, I don't know, I do not claim to understand God, but I do not claim to put him in a box.
Okay, you mentioned the late John Mack, the late Bud Hopkins, and Dr. David Jacobs, of course, who is still very much with us. But to my knowledge, none of those gentlemen ever made the connection between UFOs, ETs, the modern-day alien abduction phenomena, and fallen angels. And within it, they never put this through the biblical lens. Why are you necessarily making that jump?
Well, when I studied the prophecies of the Bible, especially the time where Israel comes into the land and David becomes king, to the time of the Roman exile, where the Rome comes in 70 AD and destroys Jerusalem and the temple, leaving only the Western Wall. When I looked at the prophecies concerning the rise and fall of the nations, I was shocked at how accurate they were, and that events today also fall within the scope of biblical prophecy. And so I started to really think, okay, I need to look deeper into the history. Who are these countries? Where did they come from? Who are the Greeks? Who are the Persians? Who are the Babylonians? Even who are the Jews? They're apparently among us still. Who are these people? And as I looked into it, it really goes back to the ancient land of Mesopotamia, where after the flood, it says the sons of Noah settled in the land of Shinar, which archaeologists refer to as the Sumerian civilization. So this is where civilization came from. And when you look at the cities, they bear many of the names of the children and grandchildren of Noah. Shem, from whom come the Semites. There's he is the father of Elam, and the Elamites are in the south of Persia. There's the Elamite civilization. There is Madai, who is in the north, and he's one of the sons of Gog and Magog. So he's one of the sons of Japheth, and Japheth gives birth to a son who has another son who's Madai. And in the north of Iran, the Medes and the Persians formed an empire. The Greeks, they go back to four tribes who go back to the line of Yafet. You start to see that the Egyptians, for instance, they're the sons of Mizraim, the sons of Ham, one of the sons of Noah. His son, Noah had Ham, and Ham had Mizraim. To this day, Egypt is called Mesr in Arabic and in Persian, and the Hebrews call that country Mizraim still. And every time you see the word Mizraim in the Bible, it's been translated as Egypt, and in Mizraim is the son of Ham, we are told. And it's one of the most ancient countries of the earth. There are these tribes. I mean, you go to Wikipedia and you put in the Han tribe, and you'll see that it says that 92% of the Chinese are from the Han tribe. And the Han tribe goes back to Mr. Han.
Well, I would agree, Ali, that there is a great deal of archaeological evidence and historical evidence that would support the biblical narrative. But people like Zachariah Sitchin and others would argue that what or who was responsible for sort of kickstarting human civilization has nothing to do with Satan or demons, but rather this advanced civilization from somewhere in the galaxy that came here and basically rebooted our DNA. So
the alien.
Yes, and as you know, I mean, this represents a huge chasm in the, if I can call it, the UFO ET arena.
Yeah. So those so who let me ask you a question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I to understand that our collective ancestors were loonies, and when they wrote extensively about the contact they had with these beings, when we got there, we were shocked at how advanced the earliest civilization was. And we wanted to know because there was writing, and you know, we were able to eventually read even the most ancient tablets because we could read the Assyrian language in the north, the Akkadian, because Hebrew was a sub-language of Akkadian. Through Hebrew, we could read Akkadian. And from the Akkadian tablets, there was lexicons that they had prepared in the north to read the language of ancient Shinar. And through that lexicon, we were able to read the oldest tablets. And what we learned is that civilization, the knowledge of civilization, was handed down inside of these places called the ziggurats by the gods. Now, one of the most important pieces of knowledge that was handed down, apparently in the temple of the Queen of Heaven, Inanna, as she likes to be called, in the city of Uruk, in the south of Mesopotamia, a city that's now been excavated, was apparently the knowledge of writing. First, the scribes emerged, and they were taught writing, and these writings were pictographs, and that is very interesting. When we look at the alien abduction phenomenon today through the eyes of the abductees, what we see is that they are a telepathic society that does not use writing. Abductees seem to report sometimes pictographs outside of doors or on machines, but by general, they are absorbing information in nonlinear fashion. They don't need to necessarily use the vocal cords in linear conversation. So their communication is pictographic, so they taught these guys images, and then eventually we alphabetized it because we like to speak in the vocalized realm. But what was the purpose of this? In order to receive the most central body of knowledge, and that were the laws that created the framework of civilization itself. Suddenly, man was going to be given the codes of civilization. Where are collective ancestors' fools when they said these codes were handed down and the world was altered? The most recent example, of course, to us, looking back, is the story of Islam, where the Arabs are living in their peninsula with the Persian Empire on one side and the Greeks on the other, and suddenly one of them says that he is speaking the words of Allah. And so from there, the first written document appears, a code that says you from now on you'll be organized in this way and around this power structure, and from there force comes out and a worldview. Before that we have the story of Jesus. Suddenly out of someplace else from, you know, this star appears, this boy is born, and he is, you know, the spirit of God himself comes over this woman, and she then, you know, becomes pregnant, and God enters the line of David, and he speaks, and the Roman Empire is never the same. The foundation of Western civilization, the moral values, the perspective, the world views that are given are at the heart of what writing then begins to record. So we are told by the ancient Mesopotamians that writing was given by the gods in order to record their laws, and you look at the code of Hammurabi, Apollo. He's the sun god. The Mesopotamians called him Shams. By the time of the Greeks, he was called Apollo. He gives the code of Hammurabi to Hammurabi, the code that becomes the law of Babylon under Hammurabi, one of the most influential legal codes. The laws of Moses, they are the foundation of so much law among the nations. The laws of Allah. So we are receiving the Hindu gods, Krishna, the Vedic texts, as well before them. So definitely there's this whole body of literature that comes from, you know, the gods, and our ancestors, yours and mine and everyone's, really felt that some sort of a mass communication was occurring, and that incredible amounts of knowledge, you know, the Jews come out of Egypt, they're slaves, they go up this mountain, they come out, and now suddenly they have the codes that allow them to function as a country and to rise to power under Solomon in such a short amount of time. So there is a transformative, there's a deep transformation we see, we record, our historians record, at the coming of these laws. Knowledge, civilization, where are our ancestors fools when they told us they gave us the knowledge of, you know, they gave us the plow, they gave us seed, like the goddess Diana gave the olive. God gives seed in the Bible. Adam was a farmer. He has all kinds of vegetation he can farm. So they give us, they have a relationship with us. God himself walks among us, apparently.
So, Ali, if I could just jump in here, because we're going to take
it's
a time out here momentarily. But are you suggesting then that we should have, if we were to remain sort of right with God, we should eschew all technological advancement and all knowledge? Is that what God wanted us to do?
No, because we are ourselves, as the children of Adam, a member of this civilization of the Elohim. We are doing these things. We are splitting Adam and looking into DNA because they do such things and greater things. Think of the angels as those who are more advanced in their understanding of the mysteries of the creation of God, the universe. That's why they're splicing genes. That's why we're doing it as well. There's nothing wrong with this information. We have always been astronomers and scientists, and those who study these codes of civilization have a relationship with these guys because apparently we are of them. And the story of the Bible is very important. It does seem to be fulfilled.
All right, let me jump in here, Ali. We'll find out how it's fulfilled. We'll take a time out, come back. More of my conversation with Ali Siadatan, the documentary UFOs, Angels, and Gods, right here on Coast to Coast AM.